Hello again.
Hello. Welcome back to us.
It's lovely to be back. Episode 2 in this next batch that we're putting out. And what have you been up to?
I know we often ask each other what's the most Jewish thing that happened to you recently, but this was quite something. My husband had to go on a work trip to Chippenham and I went with him. Just because he gets to stay in a fancy hotel, and I thought that might be quite nice. And I still had loads of work to do, and I was editing this and bits and pieces. So I was sitting in one bit of the hotel lobby, and he was working on his laptop nearby. Very, very romantic moment. And suddenly I noticed that round the corner at the reception desk, a load of staff from the hotel are having a conversation about traveling to Israel. And this is just random people in Chippenham. And straight away, you know, you get very tense because you don't know how the conversation is going to go when people are talking about Israel. But it was all about who's been on holiday there before and how brilliant it is. And it was Pride Month, so I believe one of the members of staff was particularly excited about going for that and going to Tel Aviv. And then this voice came over, this sort of quite booming voice, and it turned out to be the manager of the hotel, who said, "There's one thing you really have to think about if you're going to go out partying in Israel." And both my husband and I sort of paused what we were doing. And he said, "There's this drink called Arak, and it's absolutely, you've got to drink Arak like this." And see, that was what it was about. And it was the most like kind of charming and warm, lovely conversation happening. And I actually couldn't bear it anymore at that moment. And I did something that you would have hated so much, which was that I ran around the corner and I said to them, "Arak gives you a killer hangover. So make sure you drink loads of water before you have it."
Rachel.
My husband was obviously, I think, part amused, part mortified. But I ended up having this little conversation with them about drinking in Israel very briefly. And I said, "You know what, as two Jewish people randomly sitting in your hotel, that was a really nice conversation to overhear. And I'm really sorry for interrupting you." And they all laughed. And I went back to carry on with my work. And a few minutes later, the hotel manager came round to chat to us. And it turned out it was a nice Jewish boy, originally South African. And guess where he lives, Philip? Right near you. And his kids went to the same school as my son has just finished at. And there you go. It was like quite a funny little moment all in all. And he even gave us a small fridge to put our kosher bits and pieces on that he keeps in his room when he needs it. So, yeah.
Lovely. I have to say, I remember drinking in Israel. And the weirdest thing is when you've had, I guess, a few too many drinks, there's also a drink already lined up for you for the next one. And then you get attacked by a massive fish. And then you're caught between a rack and a hard place. It's just...
I wish you could have audibly heard the sigh that I just did.
It was watching your face as this tale unraveled. You think, "Oh, this is a really interesting story that's coming up." Oh, no, it's just a very, very good pun.
Okay. It was very sweet and funny, though. And I really love an unexpected positive Jewish moment. It's always a fun thing. What about you, Philip? What's the most Jewish thing that's happened to you recently?
Well, mine was, I guess, expected to be Jewish, but ultimately wasn't. You contacted me last week and asked if I was free to film a corporate film on Monday because they were specifically looking for a Jewish actor this age that, you know, I ticked all the right boxes.
That's from my friend Lenny, casting director Lenny. Yes, so go on, what happened?
So I said yes. You put me in touch with Lenny and she was a delight. Sent my stuff through. Yes, they liked me. They want me for the job. Very nice. So I got to go and do a day's filming this week on a corporate film that's it's a secret project. I'm not allowed to tell. Well, it's not. I'm not allowed. I don't know what it's for because I didn't think to ask the question. I think it's an internal thing. It will never make it out there into the big wide world. It's just for internal use. But I had to play the part of a dentist who a bit disillusioned with life. And then something kind of happens that makes me realize there's more to life. And it's great. It's a really nice thing. I got to drive a Mercedes for a little short time, which is always depressing when you then have to give it back and drive home in your own Yaris. But I got to the end of the day and I suddenly thought, at no point have I needed to be Jewish in this thing.
Like, no, what do you mean? Was there not any Jewish elements to the character?
None whatsoever. You couldn't even claim, "Oh, well, he's a dentist. He must be Jewish," because there are plenty of non-Jewish dentists. But sorry, the whole day was lovely. It was really nice. The director was fantastic. The crew was all really, really nice. And it didn't even strike me as odd during the day. But it's just at the end of the day, when I was kind of looking back through the notes so I could see who I needed to invoice and what to do, I was like, hang on a minute. They were insistent that it was a Jewish actor. It was bizarre. So that, I guess, was my surprisingly most un-Jewish thing of the week.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like the people making the film or commissioning the film either were really pro-Jews or really anti-Jews.
Yeah.
How odd. Well, talking of pro-Jews, I don't know. It's always very hard to segue at this moment. But this week's episode with the fabulous Tehran, I was just so excited that we got to chat to him at length, having spent quality time with him in Edinburgh. He's such an interesting person and cuts a very striking figure marching across Bristow Square.
There was a bit of a false start to this episode, which we're going to kick off with, I think. We'll do that and we might come back to really properly launch the episode. But Tehran is such a vibrant, amazingly interesting and articulate character. Such a lovely interviewee. So we're going to play this first little bit with you because it was technically before the show had started, but he knew we were recording. So this is all fine to go out.
Yeah, no litigation.
But we often start explaining the rules to the guests because obviously you've got things like keep it PG-13. Let's try not to talk over each other. It's difficult for Jews, but we'll try our best. And we told him one of the rules we have, which you'll hear now. There are no wrong answers. Whatever your answers are is perfect.
Just... Yeah, so anyway, my favorite artist is Kanye West. And the I just love Kanye West. When I'm wearing Balenciaga, I listen to my Kanye West album, and it's just, okay, let's talk about being Jewish. Jews in comedy? No way!
It'll never catch on.
Hello, I'm Rachel Krieger.
And I'm Philip Simon. We are two Jewish comedians.
I'm Orthodox, and as school exams end, I'm reminded that when mine finished, I thank God for getting me through them.
And I'm Reform, and as school exams end, I'm reminded that when mine finished, I stopped praying to God because I didn't need him anymore.
In each episode of the show, we chat to two of our favourite Jews about their lives and experiences growing up and how much Jewishness plays a part.
Are they A-levels or O-levels? Welcome to Jutok and Me.
Let's introduce our guest. He's an international comedian, actor, host, and TV and radio personality. It's Tehran.
Yay. You know, only the best people on the planet get the one name title. You know that, right?
So it's absolutely like, it's you and Madonna.
Exactly. Madonna, Cher, Jesus. Also another Jew. I want to point that out. People forget that all the time.
It does have to be a special name. I don't think it would work with Philip.
You could own it. Beyonce. Oh, that's not a comment. I don't know.
Do you like being called just by your name? Like your first name?
I prefer just being Tehran. It's actually part of my, not only designation, it's a big part of my identity, especially being half Black, half Persian, having the name Tehran. Since I was a little kid, it set me apart. I'm also the only Persian person in the world who has the name Tehran. So that makes it even more important and even more relevant to who I am as a person.
Does it annoy you if people don't do that in the middle?
No, actually, I say the Tehran part because I'm so used to it, but half my family says my name. So actually, I have a couple cousins that just call me Tyrone. So it's not. I like if you get the Tuh and the Ron. Other than that, I'm good. So if it's Tehran, Tehran, as long as it's not Tehran or Tehran, Tehran hurts. It hurts my soul. Tehran.
I got a friend Tehran.
But Tehran, that's the way to go.
I'm very much the same with Philip or Philip. So
You're the same if people put two L's.
Yeah, but if I can hear the second L, I get very upset.
It's a, I can see Welsh. That being a thing. If it's like Phil Lip,
you're Phil, like, it's Lip. Philip. Yeah.
Philip.
Yeah. I don't like it when people put an extra A, like Rachel. You know, that is a legit spelling, but that's not my spelling. This is very deep.
It actually, what's in a name? Everything, right? So names are actually very important. It's the way people get elected into office. It's the way CEOs become leaders of companies. And it's also the way you get the most dates. Go on a date with a girl named Julia, call her Jennifer and see what happens. You know, all hell breaks loose. You can't pull out the Shakespeare, what's in a name then? No one wants to listen to you then.
Do you think, because I know in America you're brought up thinking anyone can be president, do you think that one day there'll be a Tehran in that role?
One day there will definitely never be a Tehran in the role of American president. We haven't even had a female president or anyone close. Sure, we have Kamala Harris, who's the vice president, but we haven't seen her for the last 4 years. So we have no idea what they did to that poor woman. So I don't know if there'll ever be a Tehran president. I don't even know if there'll ever be another Tehran after me. So if we don't.
Oh, my goodness. All the people listening will be naming their babies after you.
It's going to be like the number one name in 2022.
9 months from now. You wait.
It's a whole thing, but I am the only Iranian person named Tehran in the entire world. So if you ever ask any Iranian person, do you know Tehran? They will be like, yes, and literally just mean me.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it works. It's great for branding. It's great for branding and promotional purposes.
I mean, to be honest, if you said to most Jews, do you know Rachel? Most of them know Rachel.
They know a Rachel.
Most of them know this Rachel.
Yeah. I'm very loud.
No, you're known. You're actually, Rachel is known and is loud. Those things are not mutually exclusive. They are the Venn diagram of who Rachel is. Even in Edinburgh, everybody knew. When you said Rachel, they literally just...
The Jews did, for sure.
Yeah. All the Jews did. Even Jews named Rachel thought of you. Even the Jews named Rachel were like, oh, you mean Rachel Krieger.
In my class, there were 6 Rachels and a Rachel and a Rochelle. It's literally the most boring name, but I've had to kind of try and own it.
There was a time where the Rachel, Rochelle, Rachel was like the name, you know? And now, and they've tried to like spin it around Razel, you know, they've tried to like modify it, but.
Yeah, they tried to zhuzh it up.
Exactly. They do that still... with names. They've never done that with Philip. They've never done that one.
The French tried with Philippe.
Yeah, Philippe. But... That's the closest you got. And especially, why is it a PH in the first place? Can we talk about that? Let's fight.
When I was about 5 or 6, I remember writing my name on a piece of work I had done at school. I didn't think PH made any sense. It had to be an F, but I kept the H in. So I spelt my name F-H-I-L-I-P.
Yeah.
So, and... it's nonsense. PH.
So you misspelled your own name. But that's it's important. And I'll express, like, especially to identity. And I use how Tehran is very important to my identity, especially being in the United States, connecting me to my Iranian heritage, also having more of an ethnic sounding name. So it correlates to my Blackness. But I say the same thing about Jewish names all the time, especially Israeli names. When people change their names to assimilate, I'm like, that's the wrong direction. Let's have that pride. Being proud of yourself and having pride are two different things. Being proud, you should be proud. Like, I love me, and that's how I'm able to love you. Having pride is I love me and I hate you. Pride is horrible, but being proud of your cultural heritage and having that proudness withstand, and it starts with something as simple as a name. It starts with a name like Rachel and spelled correctly. That's a real thing. It could be anything from Moshe to Yerachmiel. They are sources of pride. Let's not try to simplify them for others. Let's educate others to simplify ourselves. And that's another thing. There is a whole discussion in Judaism in regards to conversion. And because I'm Persian, Black, and Jewish, people's first thought is that I'm a convert. And it's so interesting because my grandmother, my mother's mother, might not think that half the Jewish people are Jewish because they're not from directly or direct descendants in the Middle East. So it's an interesting dynamic that plays out. As a Mizrahi Jew, she thinks that that's the realest Jew you can be, is this Middle Eastern, stayed in the Middle East, have been in the Middle East kind of Jewish person, whether it's Mizrahi or Yemenite or true Israeli. And that's what she thinks as well. So it's just very interesting how everyone has their own idea of what Judaism is and should be, when it's really about uniting people. That's the fundamental thing, is about community, and everyone wants to kind of disband that in some way.
So we know now a little bit about your background. We always like to find out what type of Jew people describe them as. You know, for me, I'm Reform, Rachel's Orthodox. It sounds like your background is far more interesting than any of ours. what kind of a Jew are you?
So I'm the ish part of the Jew-ish. Judaism has been obviously a huge part of my identity culturally and heritage-wise, as well as a play in my ethnicity of who I am. As far as the religion itself, I'm not as strict deeply religious as the convert, right? I do the high holidays. I park far, walk. You know what I'm saying? Like, I do the high holidays. I celebrate the few joyous occasions we have. I cry on the ones that we're supposed to. I wailing wall it up. But it has a lot more to do with who I am as a person than what I am as a person. Mm-hmm. And who I am is someone who is Jewish, or at least part Jewish. What I am is a human being. And a lot of people always ask me, like, what religion are you? Because of my background, my family's background of being half Muslim, half Jewish, Zoroastrian roots, even Christianity. And so few people simply ask me, am I a good person?
Are you a good person?
No, I'm not. But I am a Jew. So there is no hell. Take that, people. Take that.
So what would you say is the most Jewish thing that's happened to you recently?
Surprisingly, for someone who is all about encompassing everything, I have been told I am a very Jewish person. I do nebbish things all the time. Okay. That Yiddishness for the grumpiness, which I don't know where it came from. But the most Jewish thing that I did recently was I was at Shabbat dinner and pretended to eat the food, even though it was extremely bland, and I just secretly threw it away. That was the most Jewish thing that I've done. Like, I was like, oh, and even asked, and I got rid of it too fast, and they second filled up my plate. And I was like, oh, it took forever to dump this in a way that no one saw. So
I need to know what the food was. I mean, I'm assuming super Ashkenazi.
It was super Ashkenaz food. Yes, it was definitely super Ashkenaz food. And because of, once again, going back to that Middle Eastern root, I am used to that Middle Eastern flavor. Everything's spiced up from the prayers to the food. Okay, from the prayers to the food. And when you go Mizrahi, you stay Mizrahi. You stay in that field of food. Those spices cannot be touched. So it was very bland. I appreciated it. It was a friend of a friend's Shabbat who we went to. Usually I do go to my very good friend Menachem Silverstein's Shabbat. That is our Shabbat right. Friday hangout. But this one was a change of pace and change of place. And it didn't go according to plan, as most things don't.
I think we ask a lot of the non-Jewish world to understand what a Jew is when there's, we can't even agree amongst ourselves, and we can't even agree on like what a stew should be called. Like, once you put meat and potatoes and beans in a pot, and it has a different name for every kind of community.
That's a real thing. Everyone has a different name for basically a lot of the same stuff.
Mm.
You know, a lot of the same stuff. But gefilte fish stays gefilte fish. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know how that kind of worked its way.
I think because no one's trying to take it off the Ashkenazis. Like, no one else wants it. You're not trying to spice that up.
Nobody. I had to tell my black cousins that gefilte fish was Jewish fried chicken. That's what I have to do. Challah bread is just Jewish cornbread. That's kind of how you got to translate things sometimes.
How did you find people kind of took to you as a Jew in Edinburgh? Did you get, because when I went to see your show, there was quite a lot of Jewish people in the audience that night, just coincidentally. But when you say on stage that you, because you kind of do it like a reveal in that show, that you have this complex heritage from each grandparent.
Here's the most interesting thing. As the world has continued, and there's more progressive-minded people in the world, I've realized that people are much more welcoming than they used to be as I was growing up. We're so used to seeing mixed people and intersectionality now that it's almost a part of our everyday existence. But when I was growing up, it was very new. I mean, even in the United States, it wasn't until 1969 that black and white people could even legally get married. So fast forward from 1970, almost 20 years, and me being born, people still weren't used to seeing mixed people. Every day now, of course, we know Drake, but I was basically the Drake of my time growing up. And Here we are. And I can imagine what it was like for Drake as well, because we're growing up in a world which didn't understand that you could be black and Jewish. You couldn't, that you could be a person of color and also Jewish. So you could be a Jew of color, or better yet, a Jew of diversity. Because Judaism ranges in all races, ethnicities, and skin tones. And people still have a hard time seeing it, but they're seeing it and being more open to it more and more. So even in Edinburgh, it was people like you who welcomed me right away. I was very grateful for it. You open arms, invited me to do your show and put me in contact with other people in the Jewish community, especially in Edinburgh, where I was very surprised there was a Chabad in Edinburgh. I mean, I'm never surprised there's a Chabad anywhere. I'm sure there's a Chabad in Baghdad for some reason. But I didn't see a lot of Jewish representation until I met you. And then all I saw was Jewish representation. So thank you for introducing me to a community that means so much to me.
I was a bit sad we never got to do Shabbos dinner at the end together. The timings didn't work with your show, but maybe another time.
Hopefully, yeah, I would love to. I would have loved to have seen how that dinner would have progressed, especially trying to decipher all the Scottish accents at Shabbat.
Oh no, Shabbat dinner at Chabad in Edinburgh, it's all tourists.
It's really just a load of people eating too quickly because they've hidden their food around the room and then getting stuck in the first place.
That's so funny. Yeah. I was looking forward to hearing someone be like, oh, I need some latke. Like, I just want to be like, yeah.
They'll deep fry anything. So
that is a real thing. Edinburgh, the food was all deep fried. Everything. I'm not a healthy eater. Everyone thinks that I'm healthy because I'm physically fit. Thank you, Black genetics. But tall, I'm lean, athletic, I'm 6'2", whatever, I have great credit. If anyone's trying to get married, holler at me. Anyway, the point I'm making is this, is that almost 6'3", who cares? The point, also graduated from law school. No one cares about these things. So all I'm saying, very good looking, rugged, handsome. Anyway, it doesn't matter. What I'm saying is the food in Edinburgh was all deep fried food. And even myself, who am not a very healthy eater, I found eating there to be a chore. I just feel like Scotland is full of unhealthy eaters with jovial attitudes, and that's why they drink. I don't have proof. That's not scientific. I'm sure Harvard did a study, but that's what I saw in Edinburgh.
Talking of food, Rachel.
Sorry.
That was such a great segue. You're one of my favorite people. You just have such great energy.
Ah, thank you. Yeah. We've worked together a long time through his draw school and his size, and I'm just a saint.
And I'm sure you keep Philip in check because of you have a skull, a random human skull in your background. And it's like, don't let this happen to you, Philip.
That was actually the original co-host from the pilot.
That was the original Philip.
I came in for episode 2.
Yeah.
It is lovely. It's Yorick from a production of Hamlet. And
alas, poor Yorick, I knew him Horatio.
Correct. Thank you very much for not saying I knew him well, because that's very annoying when people say that. We had two made. They were really, really expensive. And I kept one and the director kept the other one. And my dad finds them very stressful because he's a dentist who trained at a time when you did medicine first. So whenever he looks at the skull, he finds it frustrating that bits of it are anatomically accurate and bits of it aren't, because it had to look right under the lights. Sure. And that disconnect for him is very jarring. That's also
medical,
the hungriest person.
Feel the same way about medical shows, by the way. When they watch I watch a medical show, I'm enthralled. But both my sisters are doctors, and they are just always like, that's actually not what we would do. That's not correct. It's like, yo, can you let House be a diagnostician? Like, there is no such thing as a diagnostician. I was like, really? Because I'm a diagnostician.
We all are now. We have Google.
Exactly.
I mean, are they saying they wouldn't take a Bic pen like and stab it in someone's neck and then they'd be able to breathe again? Like, we all know how to do that now.
Thank you, WebMD. Thank you, House. Thank you, Chicago Med. Thank you, Grey's
Anatomy. Honestly. If anything goes down, like there's a zombie apocalypse, a lot of us are doctors now.
100%. And more of us are DJs. And that's going to save the world.
There's one that too. It's actually a doctor of philosophy, though.
Really unhelpful. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. When we have that, when we need an epiphany, we'll call him, you know?
I hope we get to that stage. Instead, we'll be arguing over the last latke in a Scottish accent.
100%.
Well, we've talked a lot about food and we think a lot about food. I know you and I, like in the limited amount of time we've known each other, I think our conversations have been 98% food related. So what is your earliest Jewish food memory, Tehran? Or is there like a favorite thing you have to eat that is culturally super Jewish?
So my earliest food memory also goes back to gefilte fish. So I had been introduced to a lot of amazing Middle Eastern food, and that's what my palate lies. And I remember the first time I had gefilte fish, I was 5 or 6 years old. And I remember just putting it in my mouth and then immediately spitting it out because I had just never had. And once again, I don't want to like blame the Ashkenaz blandness, but I just never had food like that. I had never had the fish before. And
no, it has a very specific texture.
Exactly. It has this texture that I wasn't used to. And it was like, it looked like it would be fried, like, you know, like a cod or something like this, or like a catfish, and it wasn't. And I just remember going, and my grandmother just like being like, no, it's their fish, eat it. And then developing a taste for it.
So do you actually like it now?
I don't not like it. And I think that's a huge improvement. You have to understand, especially with a Persian background also, we have a lot of like eclectic food. You have gourmet sabzi and you have all these foods. And if you ever go to Israel and you go to Tel Aviv, some of these best restaurants are the Middle Eastern restaurants. So a lot of people get that flavor. And it's just, it's a wonderful, and if you go to places like Haifa and just taste the cuisine, you're just impressed. And there's actually this amazing documentary, which I just watched recently. I forget the name of the director, but she did an awesome, amazing project. It's called Breaking Bread. And it's about a food competition that was developed in Haifa, which includes Israelis and Palestinians to join up, team up, and give new twists to ancient traditional foods, from kanafe to latkes. And it's just very wonderful. And I went to a restaurant that had that, and I was just like, now this is food. This was food. The best gefilte fish I've ever had, actually.
My daughter-in-law loves kanafe, actually. That's a thing she's mentioned quite a few times.
By the way, I hate kanafe. So just to let you know, I'm not only picking on one, but my palate, because it's just as mixed and intersectional as I am. So I love Persian food and I love Arabic food, but there's a lot of the food that I don't like or won't even touch.
Right. It's just what's the worst?
There's this Persian food called fesenjoun. And to be very fair, fesenjoun is this ancient traditional meal. It's got this rice base with this buttery gold saffron covering. And then they go and pour diarrhea all over it. And I just refuse to eat it. I don't know what it is. I get it. It's like a walnut, sour something topping thing. I just don't want to eat it. I just can't. I can't eat it. I just don't like it. I've even gone so far as to put away and put aside my lack of culture and taste it. And I was like, no. No means no. It's one of those things that I do. It's interesting what I do like and what I don't like.
And what's your favorite then?
My favorite, you know, I'll tell you something that's unilateral. Hummus is for everybody. Can we all agree to that?
100%. Yes.
We can.
Yeah. Can we all, and if you've ever had sfinj is this, it's a Moroccan Jewish donut, and it's delicious. Like these kind of things, you know, I love it. And who doesn't like shawarma? You know, shawarma can actually bring peace to the world. Shawarma could literally bring peace to the world. Everybody likes shawarma. Can we all get along and just have some shawarma?
I mean, not the vegetarians.
Okay, no, well, that's why we have to get rid of those guys. Yeah, making problems again.
There is an amazing vegan shawarma that you can get.
What?
No, it's amazing. I'm not vegan. I'm not vegetarian, but we found this thing on offer. It's saved having to buy kosher meat. It's absolutely delicious. It goes in the oven for like 3 or 4 minutes just to warm through. Pita, hummus. I promise you, it's amazing. It's probably no good to you. It's not kosher, but
it's probably not unkosher. It's just not currently been verified.
Yeah, you have to pay the money. Yeah. You know,
but,
yeah. But that's the thing. How is it not? How can it not be? It's vegetables. There's no meat, right? There's no meat. Yeah. You're not adding meat and dairy. I don't know what's going on.
But they've got the flavor perfect.
I will investigate it. I don't have faith in that, but I will investigate it and explore and feed back.
Just to say, this is something you can prove, yet you have a lot of faith in things you can't prove. Just saying. I'm just putting that out there.
I think Rachel just meant
whatever.
That she doesn't have faith in you, Philip. That's literally what she meant. I'm so sorry. She didn't mean the food. She meant you and your taste.
Well, that has always been the case.
Yeah.
No, hummus I'm a big fan of. I don't know whether we can claim it as Jewish versus Middle Eastern or Cypriot or Greek, but I do love hummus. And I started making my own hummus because it's easy. It's just really easy. Apart from you gotta peel the chickpeas, but other than that, it's dead easy. And adding a bit of beetroot, and you can make the most amazing vibrant color.
So once you start adding things to hummus, we'll have a falling out. Like, it needs to be pure. You can add tahina, you can add olive oil, you can add parsley, but beetroot and carrot and all that, no.
Well, you don't like caramelized onion hummus or...
Okay, I like caramelized onion. That's right, true.
Well, there you are.
And lamb.
Right. So once you start adding things to hummus that Rachel approves of, it's over.
Actually, I'm just going to go again and translate for you, Philip. She didn't like your white style of hummus. She liked the hummus. I don't think people realize that secretly Rachel is down with the brown. Like, I don't know if people actually know that about Rachel.
I mean,
so
I was offering purple.
But you were going like beet juice. You were like, and if you add some kale, and you just put some kale, and like you were going and some dandelion root. It's like you're going in the wrong direction. Rachel was like, add some lamb. You got to add some lamb and some cigarette ash. And that's the good hummus. Like,
I could not agree more. I think it's because I'm so massively white looking that a bit of me just craves that diversity.
I get it, Rachel. Good for you. You are the people that solve the world's problems.
I think it's nice to finally have a guest who doesn't tiptoe around the issues and calls you out, Rachel, for the bully that you are.
Bit of a bully. That is true.
Yeah.
I just want the best
for you. Three words. And every time Philip has spoken, you've been like, shh, I have no faith in you. I don't care what you think, Philip. Don't take your beet juice, hummus, and shove it up your... It's like, whoa, Rachel.
This is why I have to choose what I say very carefully.
I wish that was true.
But this is good because it leads very nicely into the next question, which is about braguses and arguments. You may know of the British upset over whether we say bagel or bigel as a pronunciation. Rachel and I do fall out over this one because I say bagel, she says bigel. But we love knowing if our guests have any braguses or silly feuds with friends or family, or just maybe it's something you know about with other people if you don't want to confess anything.
We're going to start with this bagel. Mm-hmm. Okay, so learn how to speak English. Okay, we speak English properly in America and we say bagel. Okay, buddy? USA.
It's a long discussion to the point where if we had a bingo board, this topic would come up on it.
Just to let you know, a bagel is really just an Ashkenaz donut that's also bland. That's literally how it started. Oh, you know? It's like a donut that they just had and they didn't use spices or flavor to. So everyone else had donuts and then they were like, oh, this is ours. They're like, oh, it's a bagel. And then we're like, oh, okay, we can put stuff on this and make this taste good. And for some
Do you know
reason,
what? I can forgive that. And I'll tell you why. Because I've never met a donut I didn't love.
I mean, good for you.
Krispy Kreme.
Do you have Dunkin' Donuts over there? Do you have Dunkin' Donuts?
They're good.
It is crisp, but it's not kosher here, so I've never had it. Are they good?
Yeah, very good. Krispy Kreme's not great. Dunkin' Donuts, excellent. Lidl do a lovely jam donut.
I do think it's interesting when, Rachel, you say they don't have something kosher. I've always wondered why companies don't realize that there's a huge market for kosher or halal products that you can simply do. You know, you could.
But like in America, that's true because there's so many Jews that here. There's
in New York City,
200,000 Jews. There's not like it's not worth anyone's time here. I mean, it will increase it by me buying them predominantly. I think so. There are some brands which do. Whatever. I mean, I'm clearly not starving. You've met me, so it's fine. But I feel like I've really distracted you from the question about, do you know of any really good feuds or fallings out? Because we a little bit of gossip.
I'm trying to think of a word that my friend and I got into kind of an argument. And like, she stopped talking to me over this word. It was one of those words. I can't think of the word right now. I'm trying to think. I'm having this freeze. It's a word like cliche or something. Niche versus niche and niche. Is that the
we pronounce it niche here?
Yeah, like I say niche. Exactly, niche. And then she was pronouncing it niche, and we had like a like a conversation, a Google, you know, now that Google can come into play, start looking words up. You're like, and then that was the thing. And she stopped talking to me for a couple of days over niche and niche.
I mean, ironically, this is a very specific argument. I've heard niche. I've only heard niche actually on like American TV and stuff. So yeah.
It's a very American way. I was being a little more bougie and I decided to say niche, which is even better. So that was the argument, but that's about it.
How did it escalate to the point where you weren't talking?
Well, because of my law background, there are times in an argument where I'm extremely stoic and pragmatic, and it can infuriate and annoy people who are emotional and passionate. Because I'm the breakdown, make it seem, it comes off condescending because I'm meaning to be condescending. Just like, and so that caused the rupture. But yeah, of course, we've made up now, but literally didn't speak to me for, I think, 2, maybe 3 days.
Are you tempted to use the word now when you see that person? Just
Time, actually. That's actually 100%. I had to think, and that's how I remembered what it was. Is I was thinking to myself, what's the word that I used to annoy her? And it was like, oh, niche. That's it. Niche.
You've got a look of, I mean, I wish people could see. You've got a look of such satisfaction on your face as you say the word.
It's amazing. I am the ultimate troll. I love to troll. I'm the trolls. I love it. I just love, and that's probably why I went into comedy, is so that I can push these boundaries. And I was a troll when I was in school, the smart aleck kid in classes. I was a troll when I was on the basketball court playing for my school and then college. I'm just a troll. I'm a troll. And I love sometimes pushing buttons and getting under people's skin, especially my siblings. I love it. I love getting under their skin.
Do they love it?
Eddie and me. They hate it. They absolutely hate it. My brothers, they take it very personal. My sisters deal with it by trying to reverse troll. At least they've got a handle on it.
I love that. Have any of your siblings also gone into showbiz, or is it like just you?
No, it's just me. My siblings are actually very, my whole family is actually made up of very quiet introverts. And I'm actually naturally an introvert. I just have extrovert tendencies. They don't. They actually have just introvert tendencies. So they're very quiet, not really on social media, very low key. Biggest thing is my youngest sister did her IDF service. And that was the biggest surprise to all of us. And it was because her best friend also went in. So they did that. But they are very, very low key, very quiet people.
Well, so if you think about the idea of 6 degrees of can't eat bacon, which is our version, obviously, of the Kevin Bacon principle, other than us, obviously, and your fighter sister, who's your most interesting personal Jewish connection?
I would have to say it is my good, good friend, comedian Guri Alfi. Guri Alfi, not only have I gigged with him, sure, but we have such a strong friendship. He's one of my favorite human beings on the planet. And has this amazing show that he did called The New Jew, Exploring Judaism. We speak on panels together. So he's my Jew-ru in a lot of ways. Him and it's tied with another good comedian friend of mine who's like family, Noam Schuster, who's an amazing.
I love her.
Yeah, Noam and Guri, they're my Jew-rus in that way. So Noam is like family extended because a lot of people don't know she's actually part Persian. And Guri is just, he's that guy. I just love him so much.
We've had Noam on the show. She's been on our podcast. And she was
Wow. She's amazing. I'm going to have to listen to that episode. I didn't know you had Noam Schuster on the episode. I'm there definitely going to check that out. Very, very famous in Israel. I used to go to Israel a lot. I actually used to do a show that was a unity show. I would go to Israel and Palestine and do shows bringing people together. So in Tel Aviv, Ramallah, Bethlehem, and then Jerusalem for the final show, bringing everyone in one place. It's a wonderful show. A couple people do shows. Avi Lieberman is another comedian who does a big show in Israel on a yearly basis. And hopefully one day I'll be on that if our schedules match.
That's Comedy for Kobe. I thought specifically he had non-Jewish comedians on it.
I thought he brought Jewish and non-Jewish comedians. So I know he's taken Alonzo Bowden. I know there was one year where I believe it was like before, it was an not canceled Louis C.K. I think there was a lot of years where he's got a lot of famous. I mean, there's a lot. Comedy is going to bring the world together. It's actually why I went into comedy. And I do this show with another comedian named Eric Angel called Comedy for Peace, where it's Muslim, Palestinian, and Jewish comedians all coming together and performing together. And it's just a wonderful, that's what I'm personally all about. That's like my, not who I am as a person, but it also goes back to what I am as a person. I am this intersection of diversity and a bridge between different groups of people and different cultures genetically. So it only has manifested itself into my personal and professional life.
I heard someone the other day use an expression that we're all born with a mission, and then through our life and our skills and how we develop as a person, we find what that mission is. I don't know if that's a very Christian way of looking at it, but I thought it was a nice way of looking at it.
It's an amazing way. And that person was Kanye West. Can we, okay, no.
That person. It was the child of the person who set up hashtag me too.
And once again, Philip has gone quiet. Philip is once again leaned back.
If you don't say anything, they can't point the finger.
Yeah, smart.
I'm just nodding. Oh, hashtag. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, hashtag. Anything with that, you're on board. Got it.
We seem to always be worrying about anti-Semitism in the workplace and things like that. How's being Jewish impacted on your career?
So thankfully, I'm in Hollywood where anti-Semitism is at an all-time high and low simultaneously. And how it's impacted my career is not enough. You would think being Jewish would help, but, you know, especially since, quote unquote, Hollywood is run by Jews. Really hasn't done much. hasn't done enough, you know? But to be very honest, I, of course, speak about it in my stand-up because it's, once again, it's a part of what I am. And that's what stand-up's really about, is going on stage and telling your story. And there's room for everybody's story when it comes to stand-up. And it's allowing the audience to relate to you through you and through your material. And so I talk about my Jewish heritage. I talk about my grandmothers. I talk about my life. And it's just a natural onset. Now, something that has been pointed out to me recently is that I have very Jewish mannerisms, especially Middle Eastern Jewish mannerisms, when I'm on stage. So even though I was born,
I'm just pausing you to say that you're literally doing one now. Like you literally did the kind of pinched finger to express yourself.
It's subconscious. I promise you. Like I don't even mean to do it. It's just something, I guess, because I was around it so much. It just becomes part of who I am and how I am. And now, of course, what I am. People point that out all the time, and they've been pointing it out more and more recently as there's been a highlight on Judaism and I've had a more Jewish crowd coming to my show. They're like, "Why you look like a Jewish grandfather when you're speaking?" And I'm like, "Why?" They're like, "Even the way you say why?" Like, it's just a thing. I don't know what, I guess it's just, it's inherent now.
You've brought up Kanye a few times in this chat and also before we started recording. And I just wonder, like, I've heard from a few kind of intersectional Jews here how challenging his particular current diatribe has been because of how it makes people feel about Jews and about Black people and whatever. I just wondered how you feel about all that.
There's this actual connection between Jewish and Black people and in the civil rights movement. You know, everyone points to the idea that when Martin Luther King was marching, along beside him was also a rabbi. And those are the images that we should be speaking about and prevalent, because two oppressed minorities should come together, right? That's the conversation we should be having. And the reason why I bring Kanye up is because not only is it absolutely absurd, the things that he says, and because of that, it's interesting and that troll of me loves to point light at it, but his conversation was, on one hand, extremely damaging to that unity. But on the other hand, at least it's created conversation and points of conversation. Now, those conversations don't always go in the direction that I would like them to. Sometimes those conversations go very left, and it's unfortunate because when most people say they blame the Jews or hate the Jews, or they're going to go DEFCON 3 on the Jews, or that the Jews have stolen from them, they literally just mean seven Jews, okay? They literally mean seven Jews. They don't mean the Rachels and the Phillips, and they don't even know enough to know that. They don't even know that they're only coming into contact with seven people, and I would be very upset if someone was robbed by seven Black people and then assumed all Black people stole. It would be a very similar concept. Stop doing that. Stop creating this monolith of what Jewishness or Judaism is. There is no monolith. There is no one statue. It isn't Woody Allen. And it's definitely not Bernie Madoff. It is Tehran. Right. It is Rachel. It is Philip. It is Drake. It is all these different people that are this rainbow of what Judaism is. And so I bring up Kanye because on one hand, I find it very amusing. And on the other hand, I find it very annoying that we keep giving highlight to stop making stupid people famous. Stop making stupid people. And when stupid people do stupid things, making that famous. I don't take away from his music. I do take away from the things that he said. And when I'm having conversations and people are like trying to express to me, no, but what he really meant is, and here's my argument to that. If you have to explain to me what he really meant every single time, then at some point, maybe he didn't really mean that. Or more importantly, would you at least agree that Kanye is a pretty decent or good, sometimes often noted as one of the best rappers? Well, that means that he's an excellent communicator. That's what he does. He communicates. And if he's communicating ineffectively or improperly, then it's on him and not everybody else. And whenever the KKK and the Nazis agree with you, then whatever you said was wrong. I don't even care if you said Merry Christmas. If a Nazi's like, yeah, I'd be like, you know what? F Christmas. We're over Christmas. We're done.
So if the person's saying to you, yeah, but what he actually means is, wasn't in the room with Kanye when he wrote whatever he was going to say, then what they're really telling you is, here's how I interpreted it, and therefore you're wrong with how you've taken it. Because they're not in the inner circle, so they're just trying to justify their own bigotry, racism, anti-Semitism, whatever it might be.
No, that's actually an extremely, extremely relevant point. That's an amazing point that you pointed out. It is their interpretation and justification of anti-Semitism and bigotry. And the fact that it's 2023 and we still have problems with anti-Semitism, when the truth is most people in the world haven't even met a Jew. They haven't even met a Jewish person at all. There's less than 15 million Jews in the entire world. And trust me, they're not in Arkansas. So if you're in Alabama and you're blaming the Jews, the problem is probably you. You should probably look in the mirror, Billy Bob, because it's not the Jewish person that you've never met. Now, if you're in Crown Heights and you blame the Jews, I completely understand that one. Crown Heights, also blame the Jews, okay? But stop blaming labels for people's actions. Because the truth is, even in the entire world, all of us are way more alike than we are different.
I said to someone today, actually, that the only thing that brings all the Jews together is anti-Semitism. Like, if the anti-Semites really want to win, all they need to do is back off and we'll tear each other apart with our what's kosher, what's not kosher, who keeps this, who keeps that, which shul do you go to, which shul don't you go to, who's a Jew. We'll sort it out for them. Just leave us to get on with it. But anti-Semitism unites us all.
I love that you're saying that. I'm literally giving a speech about that this Sunday at the Z3 conference. So I'm talking about anti-Semitism. I'll be talking about, alongside diversity, another panel on comedy and identity within Judaism and Jews of color and diverse Jews. One of the points I will be bringing up is how anti-Semitism is a uniting factor, which, much like in the Black community, the systemic racism or racism is a uniting factor. And sometimes that's not a great thing. Sometimes we need to start moving on to a positive connection as well, because that is going to enhance and enrich our futures as community, because community is basically just communication and unity joining one another.
Amazing.
Also quite like Duolingo. Obviously there's lots of words that we like to say that are Hebrew, Yiddish, Persian, culturally ours. We'd love to know if there's something that you particularly are fond of saying, either a phrase or a word.
So it's interesting. My siblings all speak a different language. We all speak the basic package of languages, but we speak different languages at different levels, determined by which grandparent was in the home at the time that we were in that informative years of 3 to 6. So my Hebrew is not as great as it used to be, obviously. My Farsi is fluent. My Arabic is good. My Hebrew isn't as great as it used to be. And my French has suffered the most because it's the one I practice least. So when it comes to these Duolingo Hebrew words, I actually have a list of words that are some of my favorites. Number one is Abba. Everybody says Abba. Middle East says Baba. go to Africa, Baba. Everyone has like a Abba, Baba idea. And then somehow it became daddy. And I just can't get over that. Like, I don't know how that, like who, father. It's like, no, Abba feels so much more personal, you know? Abba, Baba. There's just a sweetness to it that still sits in my heart. So that's my favorite word. Number two is Mayim. Mayim, I don't know why I just like saying water. I just like saying Mayim. And it just sounds like something, it sounds something exotic, you know? And I think it's not enough. And so they're like, Mayim, would you like some Mayim? And I'm like, I just love it, you know? Number three is Manishma. Manishma just sounds like, it almost sounds Japanese if you say it in a way. Manishma. And it's just it's a fun way of saying what's up. And then coming in to head it out is Shalom. Shalom is just something that's so universal. In the rest of the Middle East, it's shalom, salam, salam aleikum. So depending on where you go, everyone says the same thing, which is like well-being or good health to you, which is such a universal, amazing way of saying something and then hating them right after. Like, how are we all saying, like, peace be on to you? And then it's like, but after I punch you in the face. Like, no, are we forgetting the major tenets of this? We literally say well-being or in our greeting. And last but not least is the word yalla. Yalla, which is adapted from Arabic, which means fast or hurry up. Yalla, everyone says it. In Israel, everyone says yalla. In Arab countries, everyone says yalla. But the one thing no one ever does is yalla. No one does anything fast in those countries. No one ever hurries up. For a culture that says yalla so much, even in Iran, everywhere you go, no one hurries for anything. And so those are my five Duolingo words of the year.
Love them.
Absolutely brilliant. I use many of them. Yalla, for sure. I say to my kids all the time. They don't know what it means. But I'm like, kids, come on, yalla, yalla. There's something very satisfying about using that language.
I find it really difficult when there's a perfect, like, Jewish, Hebrew, Yiddish, whatever, expression, and I'm in a room full of people who are not going to know what that is. Like, if you want to explain that something was a balagan, it's so clear that a balagan is so chaotic, it's crazy, it's whatever. And you have to use about five other words to make that make sense to people who don't know the words.
You can't express these feelings. There's a lot of similarities also in Farsi. We have words that there is no direct translation. You can't even express it. From Taruf, which is the culture of basically offering someone and then they have to refuse and then you offer more. There's no word. There's no translation for that. You know,
it's a feeling. It's exactly. Not just a word. It's
exactly. A also, Taruf sounds like terrorism because it is a form of terrorism. When I say no, I mean no, people. Leave me alone. You're holding me hostage. I don't want to eat your pheasant June. Okay, people? Thank you.
But I think that works both ways with the language as well. So there are some words that you can't translate out of their original language. But I know in Hebrew, there are modern words that they've just given up on. So internet is just internet. You know, they've just added the accent to make it seem kind of local. My favorite one was always my cousins saying, Zelofair. It's not fair. But why haven't they come up with a word for fair? But they haven't.
They haven't had fair since Solomon, Philip. Okay. They haven't had fair. You know, cut the baby in half, people. Cut the baby in half.
We still do that in my family, by the way. Like, not cut babies in half, but like, if you can't, if let's say it's the last donut or bagel, and you can't, you know, and there's two people who want it, then my dad would say, cut it in half. But we would still cut it in half and then just argue over whose bit was bigger. I think Solomon didn't think about that. If they cut the baby in half, you'd have to think, well, which side is bigger? This is going to a very dark place.
Definitely very Balenciaga of you right now. I'm not part of this conversation. Whatever's happening right now, I don't want to be a part of. Disclaimer.
Don't cut your baby in half.
Yeah, do not reflect mine. I just want to make a disclaimer very clear. Thank you so much.
And I've also shrunk back at this point.
Yeah, you also. That's when Philip just leaned back. It's just not part of the conversation. I love it every time.
That's okay.
I almost missed the racial discomfort.
the racial discomfort. That's what I put out there.
That's how it goes. Yeah.
Right. when we met you originally in Edinburgh, you were wearing your bathrobe the entire time. And this is literally the first time I've ever seen you without it. And I feel very weird about it. Is it that at home you don't feel the inclination?
Actually, that's so interesting. I don't wear bathrobes at home. I only wear bathrobes when I leave the house. And I wear bathrobes, by the way, everywhere. I do shows in it and people think it's a costume, but it's not a costume. I wear bathrobes. There's a couple reasons. There's a social construct element to it where I am breaking social constructs and the idea that it's a house coat versus just a coat or something to wear. Secondly, it's because of a specific incident that I started wearing it in high school. I was taking the SATs, which is our huge college entrance test, and I wore a bathrobe because they told us to dress comfortable. And the proctor didn't want to allow me to take the test, and the principal had to be brought in. And I finally was allowed to take the test, and I somehow got a perfect score on this exam. And when that happened, everyone celebrated me. But I went and read the school rules and realized there's nothing against wearing a bathrobe. And I wore bathrobes to class except for basketball days because we had to dress up during basketball. Basketball was a privilege, not a right. So other than that, I would wear a bathrobe a lot of the days, and they would try to get me in trouble. And I'm like, if you don't like the bathrobe, then change the rule. But there is no rule against it. And the school board ruled in my favor. And so I was able to wear that bathrobe, and that transcended into my college and then post-college life. And lastly, it's so easy. I just throw on a bathrobe. It goes to my lazy nature. Just wear a bathrobe. Just rocking a bathrobe. And one day I'm going to rock that bathrobe to an amazing award show when I'm winning an Emmy or a Golden Globe for something I've done. And I cannot wait for that day.
Well, you know, like Philip and I, we were all prepared because we didn't want you to feel like alone in this environment. So we both brought with our bathrobes to wear if you're going to
I have my bathrobe right here. I have my bathrobe right here. So I grab it in half a second. Love that for both of you. Love that for you.
Yeah, we thought it would make you feel part of the team. I got mine in a charity shop. I love it.
I love it.
I got mine for my birthday from my mum. It is very comfortable. We all got new bathrobes. It was like an exciting moment for our family. And my son, who's 17, is so enamored with his that he now wears it pretty much all the time in the house.
There you go.
That's his thing.
I'm ahead of the curve. That's it. I was just ahead of the curve.
Yeah. But he's also a kid with long hair. He's in high school. He's in his last year. And he has long hair because nothing in the rules says that when you get to the sixth form, end of school, you're allowed to have your hair how you want. But I think they intended that for girls. But there's nothing they can do. He can have long hair. It just says you have to tie it back for science. And he can do that if he wants.
And that's a brilliant kid. Those are the kids that change the world. The kids who basically examine and push the rules, but don't just conform because you're supposed to, you know?
100%.
Boxes are meant for things and not people.
Agreed.
Well, that's nearly all we've got time for, but how will our audience know what you're up to if you never call, you don't write? Normally we'd allocate 20 seconds to do this, but for you, 30. So where can our audience find you online, in real life?
You can find me every single Thursday at the Laugh Factory, the world famous Laugh Factory right here in West Hollywood, Los Angeles, where I have Terror on Thursdays. It's a very fun, eclectic show where I bring amazing comedians, established, up and coming people you should know, people you do know, all to the stage, all in one place. You can find me touring the country of the United States and the world coming up again in 2023. I just got back from my European tour. I'm going to be going to the Northeast part of America coming in January and then the rest of the world. And you can find me all across the board online at I Am Tehran, I-A-M-T-E-H-R-A-N. My name is Tehran, like the capital of Iran. So if you don't know how to spell it, just watch Fox News. They literally talk about me every single day. Literally, my name comes up. People don't understand how infuriating it is to hear your name and it not be referring to you. Oh, and also currently, for anyone who uses Clubhouse, not only do I have a Clubhouse room that's been running 24/7 in regards to the Iran protests, which is a movement I'm very much a part of, supporting the people of Iran against the oppressive, tyrannical Islamic Republic government, but I'm also the Clubhouse icon in which I am highlighting the movement. So instead of making the icon just about me, I made it about the movement. So it's myself at a protest. So check me out there for sure.
Well, I've absolutely loved this. And from now on, I always think of Tehran as the Jew who's going to save the world and bring us together, one plate of hummus topped with gefilte fish at a time.
I'm only eating half of that. Go on. Smart move.
Okay.
As my grandfather used to say, I loved seeing your smiling face arrive and I love seeing your little tuchus leave, which is a good thing as we've come to the end of this week's show. All that's left for us to do is to thank our guest, Tehran. Follow him on social media.
Follow us on social media, at You Talking Without the G.
Don't forget to subscribe, like and share the show with everyone you know.
And join us next time on You Talking to Me. You Talking to Me was hosted by me, Philip Simon.
And me, Rachel Krieger.
It was produced by Russell Wolkin and judged by our mothers.
Actually, gefilte fish with hummus might taste amazing. I might have to try that.
Now, I have to say, I love both of those things, but the idea of those textures together is not a good one.